This is Betsy Luce interviewing Ruth Scully and Leo Denninger, who joined our club in 1974. How did you first become aware of the hiking club?
Well, I met a guy, Pete Mayer by name. We were sort of drinking buddies for a while. He was a member of the hiking club, but more important than that, he was the nephew of Joe Mayer. And Joe Mayer at that time was Mr. Hiking Club. I mean, he had been president several times. He had done numerous 40-mile hikes. Eventually, he was the first one to get 40-40s. And he got me, Ruth and me, interested.
Leo and I had been doing a lot. We taught biology and environmental science. Leo taught AP biology and chemistry. And we were always outside. Mm-hmm. And Pete actually was a friend of a friend. And he came on a hike with us once, because a lot of our friends were hikers. Right. And Pete came with us. He said, you know, you guys might want to join the Cleveland Hiking Club. Well, we'd never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And so he gave us a schedule, and we went on a few hikes. And then, well, we started our six, and within months, we were under the table.
Yeah. Wow. My second hike was, this wasn't even for credit, the 26-mile hike.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I thought about doing the 40 that year, but I don't know if I was up for that.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I say we were under the table, at the time we joined, you didn't just sign your application.
Right.
You had to get the application signed by two members, and then you would be presented to the board at the next board meeting, and they would table your application so they could think about whether you were worthy to join the club.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then the next meeting, they would actually allow you to become a member.
Wow.
So it took a two-month process after you did your six.
Yeah, they just didn't admit anybody with a check.
Yeah.
Although, practically speaking, there were very few people that were, I don't know if anybody was rejected.
Well, we used to counsel folks out if they on those six hikes, because we were much smaller. You got to see the people who were asking to join, and there was that gal that used to come on hikes in go-go boots that we told her we didn't think it was quite the club that she wanted, and she agreed.
How many members were there in the club at that time?
Just about 200.
Yeah, just a little less than 200, actually. Oh, it was a much, much different club in those days.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
When I joined, I was 36 years old. I was probably pretty close to the average age of the club in those days, so it was a much younger club. Now I'm pretty close to 80, and, I'm a little above the average age, but not too far.
Right.
No. We had a very nice age range. When we joined, you know, as we said, Joe Mayer was still around, and Joe was in his 60s probably when we joined. And there were a whole group of older folks who were members at that time. And there were a lot of young people and a lot of people with young children.
Mm-hmm.
So that we on a hike might have, well, Kenny Howard was 10 years old. And we might have people hiking with babies in backpacks.
Oh.
And of course, older folks, you know, that would be on the hike. And it was just a very nice age range. In fact, when I was president of the club, we had 21 life members. That's 21 members who had been members for 50 years or more.
Oh, wow.
So people would join and they would stay in forever, you know, and it's not quite like that anymore.
Right.
I mean, there's not the family feel that we used
to have. Oh, yeah, we lost that some time ago.
Yeah.
Right. You used to feel that you were part of an extended family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't feel that
way.
It's
still an extended family, but the grandparents have gotten older, and the aunts and uncles have gotten older, and the kids have had kids, and we're too big to all fit in the same place anymore.
Right.
So now we do have subgroups that act like families, you know, like the East Side Sunrise Hikers have their group of people who do Buckeye Trail, you know, have that.
The Leisure Hikers.
Leisure Hikers still,
that's true,
you know each other, but it's not the whole club anymore.
Yeah, but another way it was much different, the recent members probably would find this hard to believe, instead of having three hikes an hour or so, we had three hikes a week.
Yeah.
And we had one 10-miler on Sunday morning, one 5-miler on Sunday afternoon, and maybe another 5-miler on Wednesday night or Saturday morning. But you got to remember, the demographics of the club was much different. Most of the people were working stiffs. They couldn't hike during the week. Right. So this served their needs.
Right. And we hiked wherever the hike was. So that if we were hiking in Cuyahoga Valley, everybody showed up in Cuyahoga Valley. If we were hiking on the far east side, everybody showed up there. If we were hiking far west, everybody showed up there. It wasn't quite the let's go to the closest hike.
The closest hike. Let's get it done as fast as we can so we go to the next hike.
Yeah.
It was very different.
Yeah.
I much more enjoyed the hikes in those days.
Yeah.
Some really great leaders, Jay Beswick being one.
Yeah. Jay was very, very good. But then more exciting were people like guy from Coshocton County.
Oh, I can't think of his name.
We'll think of it. But anyway, he used to lead in Cuyahoga Valley, and he would say we're going to do an 8-mile hike. And it would really be 11, but he would speed up at the end so that he could get back on time. You know, you never knew what you were going to get with him.
Right, and you know, the size of the hikes, a big hike in those days, 15 people.
Wow.
And many Sunday morning hikes were single digits, you know, 7, 8.
And then in the late 80s and early 90s, we grew.
Oh, enormously.
Yeah.
Mushroomed.
And
why do you think that was?
Well, there were more hikes. It's not anything like it is now. Right. People were becoming more aware, I think, of the health benefits of walking.
Hiking was getting good press.
I remember one hike. It was an evening hike at in June. It was a gorgeous June night at Coe Lake. And, you know, if you do Coe Lake, you're going to do Streets of Berea also. Mm-hmm. We had 102 people on that hike.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, and can you imagine the people in Berea as they saw this crowd walking down the streets?
Well, I remember a beautiful February afternoon hike at out in Cuyahoga Valley, Ray Lucen leading, and 104 people show up. So Ray asked me to be sweep. Okay. Well, I'm a mile behind Ray. That's how long the line was.
Wow. Yeah. So then that's when we decided we needed more hikes.
Mm-hmm.
And we began to, you know, to actually schedule hikes against each other.
Oh.
And so that would divide the group. Because up until that point, if the group was too large frequently, we would ask for an alternative leader. And somebody would take half the group, somebody else, the original leader, would say what he had planned to do, and maybe the other person would do it in reverse or something. Mm-hmm. And then we got more and more, and as the club, as we added hikes, the club grew, and as the club grew, we added more hikes, and it just sort of snowballed.
And I think the demographics really changed after we started adding weekday morning hikes.
Yeah.
I mean, who can go on weekday morning hikes? Retirees.
Right.
And I think that's when our age started climbing.
Yeah. Yeah. We have many more retirees. We used to be more of a couples club too. Couples and singles.
Oh.
And in fact, for a while we were being advertised, our hikes were being advertised in one of the singles columns in one of the papers.
Oh.
We finally asked her to stop doing that.
Hmm.
But in the 50s, well, even into the 60s, we were getting couples that would meet each other in the club and get married.
Oh.
Dorothy Ipavic told me about when she and her husband got married. There were 8 couples that year that got married.
Wow.
You know, but that was after the war
and
guys coming back and all of that. So we don't have, and now we have people who hike, but their spouse doesn't hike.
Right.
So that changes the social dynamic of the club, too. So.
When did the leisure hikes, how did that come about?
Oh, that was Emily Greger started those when her body started deteriorating. Oh.
Emily was a great hiker. She was president of the Buckeye Trail Association. She had been president of the hiking club. She was the first female pathfinder of the hiking club because they thought only men could schedule the hikes until Emily told them differently. she found she could no longer do the 5 milers and the vigorous hikes. So she started something called leisure hikes. And those had to be approved by Emily, and they had to include a cultural or historical or artistic element, so that you would, or a natural element, so that you would be walking for 3 miles at a slower pace, but you were also maybe visiting the temple and their museum, or looking at historic sections of some small town, or the one at Eagle Creek where she was looking at, we were looking at wildflowers, which in Eagle Creek is gorgeous, but Emily had to stop and look at every flower. You know, we finally bailed out, but
well, I think that was Art Harvey's hike.
Yes.
Dallas took over that, right?
Yes. And so, you know, and then of course when Emily passed away, then Walt Lennart's started scheduling hikes, and he wasn't as strict as Emily had been about where you could go and what you could do. And then we started scheduling more and more and more, and now the leisure hikes are, some of them are not exactly leisure, and we do 4 and 5 mile leisure hikes, but we know that they're not going to be the vigorous hikes that that a lot of our moderate hikes turn into.
Did you have any favorite hikes that you remember? Or?
Oh.
I mean, you've had so many.
Yeah. There are visuals that I remember. For example, one hike we were leading along the Holmes County Trail. It was a gorgeous, must have been early fall day. We're coming along the trail, and wild mullein, which is a very tall plant with yellow flowers, was in bloom on both sides of the trail. So it was like you were walking down a trail of candles, you know.
Right.
Or one that Karen Leary led. It was an off-trail hike, actually, in South Chagrin, but it was a very, very cold February day, of maybe January, but late winter. And it was so cold, the snow had crystallized, and it was an absolutely sunny day. And so the snow on the ground and the trees were all just sparkling. And so it's those visuals that I remember.
You know, I'm similar from Penitentiary Glen, Joe Kosar leading a couple of winters ago. So it was the stars were shining from the snow. Yeah.
And of course, there's a hike from hell. You know,
if you were on that hike, you remember it.
You don't have to say who the leader was, but it was
Paul Ruck.
It was Gene and Paul Ruck were leading it, and it was part of a week long hike. We were doing the Sheltoe Trail.
It was a 5-year project, I believe.
And we would hike for just like 6 days in April and in Kentucky. And they did a wonderful job with planning it and everything. The only thing is there had been an ice storm, and a lot of trees on the trail came down. And Gene did check with the rangers in the park, and they said, no, everything's fine, you can go. Well, we had a bus that was going to take us from our hotel to the trail head and then pick us up when we came out. But there were so many trees down that we were moving, climbing trees, moving branches, doing everything else.
And since the trees were down, the blazes were down, so we were often lost. and trying to get reoriented.
We all ran out of water.
Out of water, out of light.
Yeah, it got dark.
Oh my goodness.
We were way behind where we were supposed to meet.
And
our
cell phones
bus.
Didn't, I don't know if you even had cell phones in those days. They didn't work in the hills.
No.
But Paul says to me, well, Leo, you're the fastest guy here. Why don't you walk as fast as you can and see if the bus driver is still there and tell him to wait? Well, you know, I barely got out of the woods before it was pitch black. And I was so thirsty, I was going to, you know, use a creek and deal with the consequences later. So the bus driver was there, and I told him what the situation was. I asked him if he had any water. He said, no, but I got a lot of soda. Oh.
Yeah, he would bring coolers of soda for us.
Yeah.
And then he waited for most of us to come out, and Rachel and Lillian Braun and somebody else had decided that they couldn't make it. And so we found a place along a road that they could wait. Mm. And we said, when we get to the bus, we'll come back. So we had to go back looking for them. Well,
In the dark.
But they had decided that they might have to stay in the woods overnight. So they didn't want to build a shelter or anything like that in the woods because they were afraid of bears. So they built this little fortress kind of thing in the middle of a logging road.
Oh.
And, you know, what if something, you know, a trucker had something down? That was not the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
But we managed to pick them up and
I think we finally got back to the hotel at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
But so that's why anybody who was on there, if you say hike from hell, they know exactly what we're talking about.
You were lucky to everybody get out safely.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
We made it, but it was tough.
Yeah. And then there were, you know, other, you know, some of our Explore Ohio hikes were absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, they were very interesting.
You know, and I mean, there are just so many.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you gone on many excursions, like to other countries? Or
not as many as some folks have. We went to Slovenia with John.
Oh.
We led the excursion to Grand Manan, which is an island in the Bay of Fundy.
Oh.
It's in Canada.
Yeah. And that, it's a wonderful place. The island slants. So one side hits the ocean. The other side, there's a huge cliff before you get to the ocean. And so you have a lot of wave action along the cliff side and tide action along the shore side. And it's 50 miles of trail around the island.
Oh.
And so we stayed at an old inn, 1852, right across from the fishing dock. They served wonderful meals. You had a choice of two entrees every day. One would be a meat entree, and they could tell you what that was the day before. But they couldn't tell you what the fish entree would be until the next morning when they went across the street to the dock to get to see what was fresh coming in.
Right.
But that was a fun trip.
I think everybody remembers the lobster stew that guy made.
Oh, yeah. That was the best lobster.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many people would come on an excursion? Did you have to cut it off even then? Or?
Yeah. We did it. I think there were 24 or something like that on that one. We also led the one to Greenbrier River Trail.
Yeah, we led one to the Laurentian Mountains.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. And then we've gone on a number of Ron Konashinsky's, you know, like to Newfoundland and to Glacier and things like that. And they're all good.
And we were actually on the first international trip that the club offered in 1978.
Where was that?
It was in Switzerland. Cecil Dobbins leading.
Oh.
Yeah. This was just before Cecil went professional. He was leading hikes in Switzerland, and he invited the hiking club to join him. He would be over for 6 or 8 weeks.
Most of the summer, actually.
Yeah. And he told us exactly where he was going to be any 1 week, and if you wanted to join him, let him know, and, you know, he'd make the arrangements and you could join him. So we joined him for, I think, 3 weeks from the Eiger to the Matterhorn. And that was great. And then after that, he went professional. He was using the hiking club as a trial run.
Oh, okay.
And so we have the rule in the club that as long as you have two members on a hike, you count that for mileage. Well, Cecil was still would get it approved for mileage for anybody who came over from the hiking club. And so he would get credit anytime for a hiking club hike anytime anybody came. And so, or maybe that's when we made it, it had to be two members because it was just two people.
I think he was taking credit for.
Yeah, it was two people on any hike. And so he would say, well, these are visitors. And finally, the board said, no, it has to be two members. Right. You get credit if another member is there, but not if you're just leading professionally, sir. Mm-hmm. You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how about your memories of camp?
Oh, apple butter.
Yeah, apple butter, that was sort of traditional when we joined. Yeah, I remember one night we were doing it. We stayed overnight at the cabin. I slept out on the deck in my sleeping bag, and I woke up with 4 inches of snow on top of my sleeping bag.
Oh my gosh.
That was in October. And that was what was so neat about apple butter. Joe Mayer had a huge copper kettle. And so a lot of ladies would come out, and Joe would be there, and maybe some other men, I don't know, you were there, come out the night before and prepare the apples, cook them, put them through a squeezer or Victoria or whatever. And Mr. Van Dusen, who had an orchard, it's now the U-Pick that's on Ledge Road, but would give us some of the apples that had fallen from his tree. So we collected apples from all over, go prepare them. And then all day the next day, we would be making apple butter in this big kettle. And taking turns stirring and stuff, and then another crew would empty that and process either the applesauce, because we had some people who were diabetic and wanted sugar-free applesauce, and so we'd process that, and then we'd process the apple butter, and then that night there'd be a potluck, and we would sell the apple butter as a fundraiser.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Those were the days when we were still raising funds for the Camp Improvement and Replacement Fund.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have insurance, and so we were trying to build up that endowment. Now we have insurance, and that endowment is still pretty hefty. But but in those days, we were still doing things, selling sportsman show tickets.
And then, for years and years, the 40-mile hike started at the cabin.
Right.
And there were a lot of people went out there the night before and camped out.
Hmm.
And that was sort of fun.
Right.
Yeah. People getting up at 4 a.m.
and,
well, we started the hike at 4 a.m. Getting up. And then we would do soup in the cabin. And so people would be coming back whenever they got back from their first 20. Or people would just decide to do 20.
Right.
And so it was like a big party out there. Mm. You know, it was just fun.
Yeah.
Did you and Leo do 40 miles?
I did 25.
Did 20, you really?
Yeah,
wow.
And I don't do things that hurt on purpose.
Yeah.
And I didn't quit because it hurt too much. I quit because it got too boring. I couldn't stand it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. But anyway. We did do Buckeye Trail. We did Buckeye A, Buckeye B, parts of Buckeye B, because A and B were going on simultaneously for a while. We did C, we did D, we did E, and F.
Yeah.
I didn't show that many.
Six.
Wow.
Yeah. Jim Feely, who was president in 75, and that's when Buckeye Trail was just really beginning to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
And they had finished the eastern leg. And Feely decided he wanted for us to do the Buckeye Trail. So a group of us did hike that. We were camping most of the time. We aimed for 20 miles a day. The maps were not great in that those yeah. days. So some days our 20 miles would be 23, some days they'd be 26.
And then the ultimate day was in October of this was going on in 1975. We started out in the dark, of course, at sunrise right. real late. And the map said this was going to be, what, 26?
26. We knew we were going to do a long hike that day.
And it turned out it was 34. and so we came back in the dark. The problem was we could see our cars, but the cars were parked across the river. And we thought there was a bridge there, but we couldn't find it. So we got to get back to camp. We just walked right through the river.
Well, it wasn't really a river.
It was a pretty deep stream.
It was a deep stream, right. Yeah. And, you know, wet boots and all right. of that. And so we got to the cars. And then the next day, of course, we were going to start where we ended the night before. And lo and behold, 100 yards down from where we crossed was the bridge. What was nice, Donna Scyther, who was one of the ones that actually finished every mile of that, his mother would come with us. And Mrs. Scyther didn't hike, but she would follow us occasionally in the car. She'd read her newspaper, read magazines, whatever she was doing. Well, when we cut into the woods and she, you know, mm-hmm. she went back to camp and she saw that we were going to be late, and so she put on the chili and had a huge pot of chili when we got back in. Yeah. So that was nice. And then Emily Greger wanted to do Buckeye Trail, but she didn't want to do 20 in a day. So she had the Buckeye B group that did 15 in a day, and that's the one Wilman Dunhoward and Ken Howard and a whole other crew did that. Well, of course, it took them longer. We finished right. in 27 days.
27 days. We were averaging 23 miles a day.
Yeah.
Continual?
No. Once a month.
Right.
Once a month.
Okay. And so we finished it in 75. Well, Emily continued, of course, into 76 because she was mm-hmm. doing less mileage. So that's when we joined
them
yeah. on that section.
Yeah.
And then Jeanette
DeSimone.
She was Jeanette Cozeny then.
Yeah, she wasn't married to Jim.
led the first group on the western leg because that was finished at that time. And Jean DeSimone was hiking on that. And they developed a romance. And now she's mm. Jeanette DeSimone. Mm. Mm. And then Dee... Was that Spreggs?
Dia Spreggs.
Yeah, and
he called it Buckeye Trail and Explore Ohio, because he would sometimes leave the trail to hike in some interesting places.
He was getting frustrated because, for example, Buckeye Trail through Perry County skirts Shawnee, mm-hmm. and Shawnee is one of the most interesting little towns in in Perry County. So he would do a loop into that town and then get back on the trail. The first time we did it, when we did A, we were going right past Zor, and we wanted to stop in Zor and see what it was like. And Feely says, Cincinnati won't come to you. You've got to go to Cincinnati. So
he wouldn't lead us off the trail.
He wouldn't just focus on getting...
But Jim's was very interesting. Buckeye Trail plus Explore Ohio, which gave me the idea, well, why don't we just forget the Buckeye Trail and do Explore Ohio?
Well, we had been doing a weekend away for so many years.
Right.
And we were all very, very used to having a getaway weekend. And so Leo and I are sitting in front of the fireplace at the farm room and say, gee, what are we going to do with this the Buckeye is ending. And he said, why don't we do 1 weekend a month in every county in Ohio? Hmm. I said, Deininger, you're crazy. That's going to take us 9 years.
Which it did.
It took us 9 years.
We did 10 a year. We skipped December and January.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But in January, we'd have a big party.
Big party, yeah.
Yeah. And that was a good group. We had probably 100 and some people that actually did parts of it.
Yeah.
And there was kind of a core group that did most of them.
Yeah, Ruth and I are the only ones that did the whole thing, but many people were in the 80s. You know, we had 88 counties.
Right.
And quite a few people were somewhere in the 80s. But, excuse me, I found it, you know, very interesting. Yeah. We got to see parts of Ohio the Buckeye Trail didn't touch.
Right. Yeah.
And
well, the rule was you had to, we wanted to do about 15 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was it. But look for the most interesting things or the most typical things in that county.
Right.
And then for Saturday night dinner, find either an interesting restaurant or a very good restaurant. So we would have a group dinner that night. And we did eat at some very good restaurants.
Yes.
And we ate at, what was it, Wildlife Jack?
Wildlife, I forget the exact name. But this guy had on the menu game, wild game from zebra to alligator.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, and it was that was Medina County, wasn't it?
No, it was Miami County.
I got the M right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was hiking through Cuba.
Yeah, Cuba.
Which
on
is
a Sunday afternoon,
Ohio.
It was a brutal hot day.
And these guys, there was free beer at this bar on Sundays. And they wanted to know, did we want to come in and join them for the free beer? No.
Nobody wanted beer when you're still at a hike 5 miles.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, there was some really interesting places we got to see.
Yeah.
And the deal was, I thought I was going to have to lead a lot more than I actually led. I led 8. Jim Sprague led 8. And people came out of the woodwork and said, I'll volunteer for this county, I'll volunteer for that county. And some of the counties were tough to get leaders for because, you know, like the western counties, flat agricultural land, don't have public land. But yet they managed to have some really interesting hikes.
Yeah, there was that one farmer that was a popcorn farmer that invited us to his farm to tour the farm and gave us popcorn.
Right.
You know, there were in Dundee, Sprague Candy Company.
That's in Williams County.
No, wherever it is, the guys that make
Brian Ohio's Williams County.
Okay, that makes candy canes.
Oh.
Okay, we toured that. Just all kinds of little things. A lot of historical places, Grant's birthplace, Rankin House in Brown County.
Yeah. And Louise McDonough led the hike in Mercer County. Which is, you know, flat, totally flat.
Right.
But it turned out to be extremely interesting. I mean, there's a church on every corner because the place is largely Catholic, German Catholic. We went into one church, and the ladies who were up at the altar, you know, dusting and so on, they were speaking German.
Mm.
I said, are you recent immigrants? Oh, no, our family's been here for 8 generations. Mm. Yet they were speaking German. It was so Catholic that even the public schools were named Catholic, with Catholic names, St. Joseph, St. Francis.
Well, St. Henry is a town.
St. Henry's a town, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, we toured the shrines that were there and all of that.
Yeah, Louise was a good Catholic, so she had a tour of the shrines.
Yeah.
Was it difficult to find places to stay? I mean, if you were
the only county we didn't stay in the county was... what's the one?
Mercer?
Mercer. The one where that terrible snowstorm came up the night before.
That was Wayne. Oh, Hardin.
Hardin, yeah.
We stayed in the county in Hardin, didn't we?
No, we stayed the next county over.
Okay. Yeah, and at that time, if it was a...
We stayed in Allen County.
Yeah, okay. If it was a nice weekend... A lot of us camped.
Oh.
And so that would be fine. And in Champaign County, was it, that there wasn't a lot of place to stay. We all camped And we had, for dinner, instead of going to a restaurant, Champagne grows a lot of farm-raised trout. So we had trout on the campfire. And in Sprague's hike in, where we went to Sisterville.
Oh, yeah. The hottest day in history of Ohio.
Go ahead.
104 degrees.
Mm, yeah.
And it was about 11 in the morning. I said, Jim, man, it's really hot today. It must be 93. We passed the gas station with the thermometer. It was 103.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Well, and then Jim knew it was going to be hot in the afternoon. So instead of having our big dinner and in the afternoon, we had dinner at lunchtime. We took the fly ferry across the Ohio River and went to Sisterville, West Virginia, to a very old, wonderful, historic hotel with a great dining room. And we had a wonderful lunch there. And Rachel was with us, and she thought this was the end of the hike. So she decided to have a gin and tonic. And that felt so good. She had another one.
Uh-huh. She didn't feel so good later on.
And then as we came out, it was 104 by that time. And we were, instead of hiking, we were going to go visit the locks. Mm-hmm. We could drive that. And then take the worst part of the heat of the day visiting the locks on the Ohio River.
Right.
And then we would come back and hike in the late evening,
right,
which we did, but it was still hot. Mm. And we had parked at a swimming hole. And when we got there to park, there were kids all over the place swimming in the swimming hole. When we got back, there was nobody there. We had a big watermelon in a cooler in the car, and the lady said, "You guys get the watermelon, we get the water." And we went skinny dipping.
Oh, wow.
And I remember Luce Shanker standing at the top of the hill. It was wooded, he couldn't see down,
right,
and saying, "Will you ladies hurry? We want to get in." We said, "Enjoy your watermelon." it was. I mean, that's the kind of experiences that we don't seem to have in the club anymore.
You know? Why don't, I wonder?
People don't know the fun of a weekend.
Uh-huh.
Because we're not doing any. Kenny's doing his Buckeye Trail, but he's doing 17 and more miles a day, and there aren't a lot of members these days who want to hike that much.
Right.
We used to do getaway weekends other than, after Explore Ohio ended, because that ended in 96. After Explore Ohio ended, we would still do getaway weekends. Leo and I we did Counties Revisited. Some of the people that started later into this wanted to do more.
Right.
And so we repeated some of the counties. Marcia Stefan did that. And then when that ended, people still wanted to do getaway weekends. So we would lead, like, in Holmes County. And
Millersburg.
And we would lead in Coshocton County. And we led one in Knox County, but just as a random getaway weekend. And Tobias is used to lead getaway weekends in Pennsylvania, but they weren't a regular thing.
Yeah.
And then the last time we led something at the farm, for example, we had maybe 3 people show up because we were only going to do 15 miles. And they said, why should we drive that far to get 15 when we can do more than that at home?
Why drive 90 miles to get 15? I can drive 9 miles to get 15.
Yeah, and so there isn't the understanding of how much fun a getaway weekend can be.
Right.
I think the people who do the excursions might understand.
Right.
But because these are like mini excursions,
right,
and then it takes some planning to plan one of those,
right,
and I'm not sure,
right, And the focus seems to be on miles now, yes, more than, yeah, experience.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. Right. So.
But one of the other requirements for Explore Ohio Weekend was to visit the county courthouse and have the group picture taken at the county courthouse, which leads to a very interesting story. We were hiking in Lorain County. It was in February, and Tom Lavelle was leading. We were in the city of Lorain hiking around, and it's, you know, it's late afternoon. I said, you know, Tom, it's getting dark. We better get to the courthouse. And Tom says, well, I've been looking for it, but I can't find it. Well, the courthouse in Lorain is not in the city of Lorain. It's in
Elyria.
Oh. You think the guy would have known that.
County seat is in Elyria.
So we had to hightail it over to Elyria, and we made it before dark.
And if we, I think we just walked around the block around the courthouse, yeah, but, you know, that was, yeah, that was meeting the letter of the law.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom was, you know, he sometimes did things like that. Got us lost in a swamp out in Ashtabula County.
Trumbull County.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we always had fun.
It was fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Was it the same group of people that went all the time, more or less?
With Buckeye, yes.
Right.
Except every once in a while somebody would join, right, that, you know.
For part.
Yeah. But with Explore Ohio, it was, as I said, about 100 people who were regulars, but not everybody did every one.
Right.
So sometimes we'd only have 20 people, sometimes we'd have 50 people.
Wow.
You know, and mm-hmm, it just, but it was a you know,
right,
that mm-hmm same group, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When we finished the official first section, we had dinner. Our dinner was at Gwynn, which is that Bratna mansion.
Oh, right.
That used to be mm-hmm open,
right,
you know, groups could,
right,
could rent it. And that was we had a really wonderful dinner there.
Yeah.
And but after, again, I don't know, pause while we're there.
Well, I've met a lot of colorful characters in the Cleveland Hiking Club. One of the first ones was John Shade, who was a longtime member when I joined. He led interesting hikes, but his wife kicked him out of the house, so he was living out at camp as the camp chairman, which got him in trouble with some members. Yeah.
Yeah, and John, the camp was much more rural than it is now. Kellogg Road was not paved. It just had gravel surface. Mm-hmm. And there were only two other houses on the street. And so it was, you know, you really felt like you were in a rural experience when you went out there. And John's the one that actually fixed up what is now the bunkhouse. It was our tool shed. And he fixed it up into a bunkhouse that he could have a bed in. And the outhouses were nowhere near as nice as what we have now. They were back the other way across the stream, and four-seater for women and four-seater for men. And people used to go to camp and just use it for picnics and, I mean, individually, private. Not scheduled. It was there. Any member could use it at any time. We'd go apple picking at Van Dusen's and come back and have a picnic at camp and, you know, and then clean up and leave. Well, John would be there frequently, and we used to take my nephew camping there, and John, of course, was going to be there. And if there were a group of us and conversation got too intense, John would say, well, I guess I better get up and lime the latrines, you know, and that would be his excuse for leaving the campfire. But Harold Poole.
Well, Harold, you know, Harold used to lead good hikes. The only problem was he almost always got lost, so you never knew when you were going to get back. So if you went on a Harold hike, you made sure your calendar was empty for that afternoon, because who knows when you're going to get back. And this guy, you know, he always said his hikes were 8 miles, and he would show his pedometer to people at the end of the hike was 8 miles. I said, that's because your pedometer stuck at 8 miles. My pedometer's at 11 miles.
Yeah.
And this guy would go through, nothing intimidated him. I mean, if there was a stream in the way, a lake in the way, he walked right through it, walked through wire patches. He walked on private property, which got us in trouble. Mm-hmm. And one time, especially one time, a lady really got pissed at us, and she sent her dogs on us.
Ooh.
And then she got her gun and started shooting.
Yeah.
So, was that by the camp? Or?
No. It was Cuyahoga Valley.
He hiked always in Cuyahoga Valley.
Yeah.
But then we finally got out into the road, and she gets in her car and starts chasing us in her car.
Wow.
And Harold sends Ray Lucen, this little guy, to do diplomatic service.
Oh, wow.
And then Sherlyn Latkovic.
Another guy that always got lost.
Yeah. He was our star can collector.
He was.
And in fact, he would dive into dumpsters to get aluminum out, like aluminum window frames and all kinds of stuff. And he actually had permission from Metro Parks to check their dumpsters. And he would get cut up doing this.
Because there was glass in the dumpster and he got cut up.
When Sherlyn was no longer hiking, our can aluminum collection went down considerably.
Yeah,
but he was crazy. He and Harold would be on a hike, and there would be they collected Marlboro labels in those days.
Because you could redeem them for some pretty nice stuff.
Yeah. Oh. And so
Marlboro cigarette
labels. And they would be on a road, and if there was a can or there was a Marlboro, the two of them rush to see who could get to it first, and they'd be coming, running across the road and all of this. We finally had to say, you're not allowed to jump across the road to, collect things. You can catch them on the way back or something. But, there was we had some interesting folks. Then other people that were really significant, you already mentioned Joe Mayer when we started this, but Joe and Justine Mayer were foundations. The SEPs were Frank and Miriam SEP. Frank was camp chair for a while. Joe Mayer was camp chair for a long time. But Frank and Miriam did not have children, and so Thanksgiving, Miriam on her own would prepare this huge Thanksgiving dinner at camp for anybody else that didn't have any place to go. And they also led wonderful hikes.
Oh, yes,
and
they did.
So some of those earlier people that formed Matilda Varga with her gardening knowledge and expertise. And Matilda's still a member, but she doesn't hike. She lives in Fairlawn now, and she's got COPD and other things. So she does volunteer work at the senior apartment she lives in. But I don't know. Can you think of anybody else that was?
Well, I mentioned Jay Beswick, who used to lead exemplary hikes. They're always interesting.
Yeah,
always took you some places you hadn't seen before.
Yeah. Jay was, he was a librarian, but he was an accomplished botanist and an expert in ferns. And he was just about ready to publish. They had to choose just the cover plate or something for a book on Ohio ferns when he died.
Oh.
And somehow it never got published.
And he was one of the guys that died on a hike, actually, of a heart attack.
Yeah. And which everybody says, if you're going to do it. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous October day. He chose to die right near a road, so had a heart attack. Rachel was there. She's a physician, so she gave him CPR, but she said he was dead when she, but she just did that for the comfort of the group. Banana Man was the other person to die on the hike.
Yeah.
Banana, who's that?
That Bob Krupa.
I think I was in a club then.
Okay, Bob Krupa used to bring bananas on the hike to give away, and so people called him Banana Man. And he was actually leading the hike, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah, he was.
Garfield Park.
Yeah, and on the all-purpose trail there.
He said, I think I'm going down, and he had a heart attack and died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
And who was the other fellow? I can't think of it. He was Hungarian guy.
Oh, Laszlo.
Right.
Rydell.
He died at home, but.
No, Laszlo Rydell. Rydell led a parallel life to our other Laszlo.
Really?
Yeah, they were both professional chemists. They were both hikers. They were both athletes. But they were 30 years apart. And we were hiking out at Punderson on a winter day. And we're hiking along, and Laszlo says, I have some pain in my stomach. I think I'm having indigestion. So he said, why don't you guys go ahead and I'll just sit here and recover and catch up to you. Well, of course, he never caught up to us. At the end of the hike, Jim Sprague and I went back to where we had left him, and he was dead. Mm. A massive heart attack, yeah. So we've had a few people that died leading hikes.
New Steps has become much more professional publication than it used to be. We went from Ditto machines and mimeograph and whoever could cut and paste. We would turn in articles typed preferably, but sometimes the editor had to retype them. And at one point, the person would just cut them and paste them on a piece of paper and then photocopy them. At one time, it was... when Chester Boron was a member, he was a professional printer, and so he printed New Steps, and it looked pretty nice. But then when Chester wasn't with us anymore, getting somebody to take over, Angie Lenartz took over, and she did it mimeograph, I believe, and she just typed everything. But now with word processing, and people just email their articles to Kim, and she can just format them, and it looks a whole lot better. And then we send them to a professional printer. But they used to be hand addressed, but when you have 200 people, it's not like 1,200 people. And most were couples, so that was right. it cut the number down. And then a lot of times, in order to save money, instead of mailing them, we would pass them out in the circle, and because most people hiked most of the time, and so that you could count on seeing people, and then whoever was left at the end of a week or so when they were distributing them, then they would finally mail them. But the evolution of New Steps has gone from very simple to, and there was a point, this was before we joined, when they didn't really have a newsletter.
Yeah.
This was back in the 20s or 30s. And there's in the 75th anniversary book, and again in the centennial book, there will be a article about how New Steps evolved and the Mystic 13, because nobody knew who was actually publishing or writing this thing, and everything. But it's a much neater publication now than it was.
Did they always have the cards
when you joined? Oh yes.
Right.
On the cards, and I don't have one anymore. Walter had the last one, I think, that said, "Visitors pay 10 cents." We used to charge 10 cents for a visitor because that was postage, and we would then mail them the next schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that 10 cents covered the postage of mailing them the next schedule. We stopped charging in like 76 or something like that.
That got to be a real hassle for a hike leader.
Yeah. And it was, just not worth it.
I got one of those cards, by the way.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Walter gave it to me.
Okay.
I don't know where it is.
Well, we should put it in the archives.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Ruth and Leo. Your memories are invaluable to the history of the club, and I appreciate your time to share them with all of us.
Well, it's been fun.
It has.